This is the first BLC teleconference of this year, school year, I guess you'd call it. We took the summer off from them. This is a presentation about using Braille for formatting, and I'm very excited about this as I don't use it enough, I don't think. And we have two great presenters to present to for us, Jen Golden and Jen Jessel. And they are going to do that. And we're going to keep questions afterwards. We're going to deal with the questions afterwards. So if you have questions, you could raise your hand, and then we will see a list of that raised hands. Or you can wait till after and just unmute yourselves. But if you think of something and you want to raise your hand, that is Alt-Y on the PC. And there's in the More tab, there's a button called Raise Hand. And on the phone, it's *9 to raise your hand. So I'm going to turn it over to the two Jens to present for us. And I'm going to mute my audio.
Jen, Jesso, do you want to introduce yourself, and then I'll introduce myself and start with the Braille display stuff?
Sure. Yeah. So hello, everyone. I'm so glad you all could make it to this. I'm never sure whether to call it a teleconference or webinar. So, but my name is Jen Jesso. I'm out in BC, and I am, as my job, I'm a teacher of students with visual impairments, working in an outreach role at a provincial resource center. And I personally have been using a Braille display with a computer and with note takers for about 18 years, I guess, since about 2001. So, and I use mostly Windows, but I also do use iOS and have some experience with macOS as well.
Okay, thanks, Jen. I'll just quickly introduce myself, and then one of my sections to talk about comes at the beginning, so I'll just jump right in after that. My name is Jen Golden. I'm the past president of Braille Literacy Canada, and my background is linguistics, and I've been sort of an avid reader since a very young age, and I'm a very what's the word I'm looking for? I love, if I have the choice to use Braille, I will take it. And I've spent a fair amount of time formatting documents and doing different things just in that context. So when Jen Jessel suggested this idea, I thought, hey, this sounds great, and I'm sure people would, you know, we could all benefit. And actually, I've learned some stuff from Jen as well. So that being said, I'm just going to jump right in. I do want to apologize for the technical difficulties we've been having. We will sort that out for next time, but hopefully this will all go smoothly. One thing that we're doing here is we're kind of trying to give you an overview of things, because there's so much. We could probably do a bunch of separate workshops on a lot of these topics. So we recognize that probably all of you are at different places in, you know, what you know about the devices and how to format and what you know about the software. So please bear with us. We're going to kind of run through things. We do, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jen, but we do have some documentation that we're going to send to you in the next couple days, including a bunch of keyboard commands, because basically we didn't, there's so many keyboard commands that we thought we'd spend all day if we just sort of said, okay, if you want to do this, you press control, blah, you do this, and then people would maybe try it and, you know, or, oh, I'm sorry, could you repeat that? I didn't catch that. So what we thought we would do is we're kind of going to talk about what's possible, what you can do, and then we are going to provide you with keyboard commands. And so even in terms of the questions that, you know, that we'll take at the end, depending on how much time we have, we kind of want to focus on, you know, is it possible to do this? You know, I need to be able to do that such and such with a document. You know, can you tell me how to do that, or how does that work? So that being said, I'm just going to kind of jump right in. And some of the stuff that I'm about to say, again, some of you will already know this, and some of you it'll be new. So, again, just bear with us, and we'll all see what we learn. So we thought we'd start, because this is Braille Literacy Canada, with Braille display functions and settings. And I want to thank Jen Jessel because she actually did an awesome job putting together the outline for this. I'm with her. Webinar, teleconference, I don't know. So one of the big things with Braille displays that, you know, many Braille display users find super helpful is the cursor routing buttons. And for anyone who's not familiar with them, cursor routing buttons are small buttons that are located directly above each Braille cell. And the number of cursor routing buttons, basically it's a one-to-one correlation of the number of cells on your Braille display. So if you have a 20 cell, you're going to have 20 cursor routing buttons. And the neat thing about these buttons is that you can actually move the cursor exactly to where you want it to be. So you can navigate directly to a word or a character within a word, anywhere in a document, wherever you want to be. It's actually a really fast way of, you know, if you're editing, it's really, really helpful. And in some applications, you know, when you're online or, depending on what you're doing, if you hit the cursor router, a cursor routing button, excuse me, say that 10 times fast, at a certain point, you can activate a link. So it actually has other functions besides just moving the cursor around. So it's a really helpful little thing, and it's kind of fun to play with, too, when you're, this is kind of a different thing, but I guess when you're setting up your Braille display and just getting used to it, feel free to experiment and play and just see what different things do. The shape of the text caret, or like the insertion point where your cursor is, on most displays that'll be dot 7 and 8, and you'll see it, you can, in the Braille display settings, you can decide if you want the cursor to show or not. Some people maybe find it distracting. I find it really helpful because then I can move it around. You can have it on, you can have it off, you can have it blinking, so it kind of goes, the dots come up and down, and you can change the rate, how fast that happens. So you have a lot of control, and one of the challenges Jen and I had was that, you know, it would be great to sort of go through all the Braille settings, maybe in JAWS or whatever, but we don't know what screen readers people are using. We don't know which Braille displays you have, so it's really hard to actually do that. But we wanted to highlight that you can do all these things. So one thing with the cursor routing buttons is that if you've created a document and read over it and then you want to continue adding new content, you can make sure that the text, you can verify where the cursor actually is so that you are typing in the right spot. You know kind of exactly where you're at, what is around your cursor, so that when you're inserting text, you'll sort of know what's going on. So as I said, dot 7 and 8 are usually the cursor, you know, show you where the cursor is. Again, you have all sorts of control in your settings. One thing I would encourage people to do, how I've learned what a lot of the settings are, is just to go in and try some of them. That it can get a little daunting because then if you don't like something, you have to figure out what you've changed. But nonetheless, it's kind of a fun way to figure out what's going on. You're not going to break anything. That's a really good way of getting around in a document. We're just going to look at a couple of things, common Braille display settings, and then I'm going to hand things back over to Jen. But expanding the word under the cursor, this is usually set to on, I believe, so that wherever your cursor is, it will uncontract that word. And that just sort of helps you, kind of makes it easier to find the cursor, but it if you have it on, it sort of helps you. You know, you can check the spelling of the word. You can, maybe it's easier to edit. You know, different people have different preferences about, you know, how they want that to be. But it's on by default, and so if you want it off, you have to turn it off. So, and I'm sure, you know, many of you guys realize, or you've played with this a bit, but you can set your screen reader to contracted or uncontracted Braille. So anyone who's new to learning Braille, you can definitely set things to uncontracted Braille so that you can practice. And one thing I would say, we didn't want to go into a lot of detail about different devices and platforms, but if you use a Braille display with an eye device, sometimes you can get guides that will tell you what the different keyboard commands are, but it does vary from display to display. So again, just experiment, try something and see what happens, and you'll as you kind of play with it, you'll figure out how to get the display to do what you want. So with that, I'm going to hand it back over to Jen.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jen, for the overview of the Braille display. We didn't really mention anything about sort of Braille input, but different screen readers have different features around that. So some, like JAWS, will actually enable you to use the keyboard on the Braille display to type in contracted Braille rather than using the computer keyboard. So that's something we didn't really mention, but just so people know that that's an option as well for the Braille displays that have keyboards. And of course, when you're using a Braille display with an iOS device, you may not even have a regular keyboard to use. So you might be using your Braille display for, getting the Braille output, but also for typing the input as well. And the commands around that, as Jen said, do vary based on the Braille display that you're using. So the next thing I'm going to talk about here is checking the formatting. So before we get into actually formatting a document, we want to sort of verify what things are formatted and make any changes, and then verify that those changes we've made have actually, been implemented. And so there's a couple ways of doing that. And most screen readers have these functions, but again, the specific commands vary a bit. So we're not going to go into exactly the commands, but we're just going to give you an overview. And then you will get a list of keyboard commands for some of the common screen readers after this workshop. So one of the neat things that you can do with a Braille display is that there are actually settings that allow you to display text attributes. So things like bold, underline, even things like color, and anytime that text is sort of emphasized or different in some way. And it allows you a lot of control. So there are areas in the settings section that you can go in and you can say, I want to see bold text, but I don't want to see italic. And so it gives you very fine control over which attributes you want to see, which is really useful if you're doing some kind of proofreading and want to make sure that, if you know that you've just written a document and you've used some bold text, but you haven't used any italic, you may just want to see that bold. And this varies based on the screen reader, how this is displayed. So some screen readers will use sort of an underlining to indicate these changes, so dots 7 and 8. And for those who have not, who aren't familiar with the dots on a Braille display, dots 7 and 8 are the two very bottom dots. So on a Braille display, a cell is 8 dots, and you've got the regular 6 dots at the top, and then you've got 7 and 8, which are two additional dots at the bottom that are used for things like showing where the cursor is and showing these attribute changes. And then some screen readers, if you have it set to Unified English Braille, will show the actual UEB indicators. So when you have a bold word or a bold character or a bold passage, it'll show those using the proper UEB symbols. It's not always totally perfect. In particular, if it's a passage, sometimes it's not perfect, but it's usually good for characters and words. This just depends on the screen reader that you're using, whether it uses different patterns of underlining or the UEB. If you do happen to be using speech at the same time as Braille, of course, one of the great things about a Braille display is you can actually turn off your speech completely so that you're not using any speech. But if you do have speech turned on, a lot of screen readers will also announce these changes with the speech. And there is a keyboard command that most screen readers have that will allow you to announce the text formatting under the text cursor. So even if you don't have your screen reader set to show things like bold text or colored text, you can still check that information by putting your cursor on a specific word or a character and hitting a keyboard command. And the first time you hit this command, it will display the information on your display once, and then it'll just sort of go away once you're done reading it. But if it's a, it does sometimes provide a lot of information that might be difficult to sort of digest reading just once. And so you can also hit this particular command twice and it will copy the information to an actual window where you can then, just like any other document, you can read it and sort of read it at your own pace and then press escape to get out of it when you're done reading. So that's another way to verify formatting. That's especially useful if you're in a document making particular changes and want to verify that, yep, that change has been made. And another feature that Braille displays have are called status cells. And status cells are located usually at the left or the right of the display. I think it depends on the screen reader, but sometimes they're turned on by default. Sometimes they're turned off by default. And a lot of people may not know what they are there for because they don't really use characters. They use their own sort of encoding to display information. So you do have to sort of go into your screen reader help files and read about status cells and understand what it's displaying in those cells. Because, for example, dot one being raised might mean something, and then dot one being lowered might mean something. So it's sort of an on-off indicator. But in a document, these cells can indicate, for example, what page you're on in a document, or if you're in a table, they can tell you which row and column you're in. So they're really useful for not so much understanding details about the document, but understanding the bigger picture, sort of where you are. Oh, I'm on page 7 of 10 in this document that I'm working on, or, oh, I'm in column 2, row 3 of this table. And those can be turned on and off depending on preference. So that is just something you would do in your screen reader settings. And then the last thing that I'm going to talk about is specific to JAWS. So JAWS has a feature called Text Analyzer that allows you to indicate when a document has inconsistent formatting. So this is a really useful feature to use. I sort of use it sometimes at the end when I'm about to send out a document just to verify that everything is, it's kind of like a spell checker. It just verifies, yep, everything is good. There's no inconsistencies. There's no weird spacing or font changes in the middle of a paragraph or other things that you don't want in your document. It can also be useful if after you've pasted text, because sometimes when you copy and text from one document to another, the formatting somehow changes. It'll bring over some of that formatting from the other document. And so you might end up with text that's a different font style or a different size or a different color than the rest of your document. So that can be useful to use this text analyzer if you've done a lot of copying and pasting, just to make sure that everything is consistent. Also, the command to check the formatting of the font that I mentioned just sort of back one section, that can also be useful. I often do that after I paste text just to make sure the formatting hasn't gone all funny. And so the next section is going to move into some concepts about formatting text. And so there are two ways that you can format text in a document. The first is to set up the formatting before you start typing. So in this case, you would, you know, in your head, you'd be like, okay, I'm going to start a paragraph and I want it to be indented by this amount and I want it to be this font style and size. And you would set up all that before you start typing. And then everything you type after that has that formatting applied. And then the other way of formatting is to just type everything out and then go back later and format it. So that would require you to actually select text and tell it how to be formatted. So you'd select a certain word or a paragraph and change the formatting that way. And selecting text is not too hard if you know how to navigate text with a screen reader. So if you know how to navigate by character with the arrow keys and by word, by adding certain other commands to those arrow keys, selecting text for short sections is just a matter of adding, often on Windows it's Shift, and you would just use those same navigation commands that you normally use, and you would add Shift, and then it would be, instead of just navigating by character or by word, it would be actually selecting that character or selecting that word. And then, of course, there are commands, once you have selected that text, you can have your screen reader read out just that selected text to verify that before you actually apply the formatting, you've selected the actual text that you want that formatting applied to. So that's a command that all screen readers have, but it, again, it varies by platform, and that'll be one of the ones listed in the document that we will send out. And just so you guys know as well, we are sending out all of these notes. So everything that Jen and I are going through, you will also receive. So you don't have to worry about, this is a huge amount of information. You don't have to worry about remembering all of it. And then another feature that is, as far as I know, specific to JAWS, is using place markers to select text. And so some of you may have used the place marker feature on websites. It's basically a way of dropping a reference point into text. But if you are in a document, you can actually drop a place marker in one location and navigate to another location and drop a second place marker there, and JAWS will automatically select all of the text in between those two place markers. And where this is most useful is when you have to select large amounts of text. So if you are selecting, for example, multiple paragraphs of text, that might be very hard to actually do with the navigation keys, just because there would be so much to listen to and to read. And so the place markers might be a lot easier to do that. But if you're just selecting a paragraph, if you're just selecting a character or a word, you might just want to use the navigation keys with the selection key. And then, of course, in addition to formatting text, which we're going to talk about next, is actually when you've selected text, how do you go about formatting it? You might also want to copy and paste text. And so this is basically either copying or moving text. So when you copy a text, say you have a sentence and you highlight it and you copy that sentence and you paste it, what that's done is it's duplicated the sentence. So you now have two copies of that same sentence. And whereas cutting is actually moving a sentence. So if you highlight a sentence and cut it and paste it somewhere else, what it's done is it's taken it from that first location and put it in that second location. And these commands are actually based on the operating system. So these aren't screen reader commands, but they're operating system commands that you would do to cut and paste the different text. And I think that's it for this section. So I'm going to hand it back over to Jen to cover basic formatting.
All right. So thanks, Jen, for all of that information. And yes, we will be giving you a copy of these notes. And I forgot to say that I can also provide a BRF of these notes if anybody would prefer it. We'll have it in Word, but I think I can create a BRF. So I think maybe when we send them out, we'll send out both versions, and then anybody who wants the BRF, it's there. Another thing that I wanted to mention is some of the settings that we've referred to. As you know, when you're using a screen reader, you can kind of change things on the fly. There are settings like that with a Braille display as well. For example, you can toggle between contracted and uncontracted mode on your Braille display, and there's a few things that you can kind of change quickly as you go without having to go into the settings. And I'm kind of lazy. I don't like to memorize all kinds of stuff if I don't have to, so I often do go into the settings. But anything that I do regularly, I tend to have that command memorized. So before I just go through these basic formatting items, I did want to say, and this was something that we had meant to say at the beginning, one of the things that we were talking about when planning this workshop was sort of why should we care about formatting, and you know, why is this even important for us to know all this stuff? A lot of it's really visual, and one of my thoughts was, well, if you know, people who are attending this, maybe it's, we don't really need to say it because they're attending it because they care about formatting and they want to know. But we just thought it might be worth highlighting for anyone who is sort of thinking this through, just how important it is that a document looks a certain way. I remember when I was working in the government, one of the things I had to do was prepare these memoranda for the assistant commissioner of the branch that I was in. And it was very specific about what had to be bolded and what had to be underlined. And I remember thinking, seriously? Like, this is, you know, it was all kind of the same to me, because before UEB in Braille, we only had one symbol that meant, you know, hey, this text is different. And I found that for me, that was a challenge to sort of grasp, like, when do you bold, when do you italicize, when do you underline? And sometimes it was obvious to me, like titles or, you know, different things. But I guess all this is just to say quickly that I know that sometimes for us it seems like it can be a bit over the top, but it really does make a difference. And, you know, if you're going to submit a resume or you're handing in an essay or, you know, a thesis or, you know, some of the things we listed in the announcement, it really does matter how it looks. And, you know, we want to be able to, you know, kind of compete on the same, you know, level the playing field, all that sort of thing. So that's why we just, you know, now that, you know, we tend to be all working with Word files and you know, that kind of thing, that we just thought it would be something that we wanted to make sure that we could, you know, kind of get this information out. And anybody who wanted to learn more about how to do this, we wanted to put this together. So here we are at basic formatting. And Jen kind of touched on this a little bit, the bold, italic, and underline, and that's actually what prompted me to mention this. But some of these things, like the typeface, you can be done with keyboard commands, as Jen has already noted. And it's important to kind of note that there's a difference between, a little bit of a difference between things that, you know, there's a JAWS command that allows you to do something, and some of them are just keyboard commands that anybody, if they're not using a screen reader, can, you know, a sighted person can choose to use a mouse, or they can use keyboard commands. So some of these things are actually just basic keyboard commands that don't have anything to do with, you know, using a screen reader or a Braille display. As Jen said, too, they're specific to the program that you're using, but every word processor has ways to, you know, has ways to do this. So things like text alignment, if your, you know, text is left justified, or if it's centered, or, you know, if you want it to be right justified, things like that. Let's see, other things that you can do. And again, we'll insert the commands in here after each section. Moving on to font and formatting. So things like, you know, changing the font size, the font color. You know, sometimes if I'm preparing a Word document and I know that someone who reads large print may be using it, I'm going to make sure that the font is bigger. I'm going to make sure that I use a sans serif font, for example. A font, you can find information on, like, which fonts are easier for people to read. And Jen actually probably should be talking about this, because she probably knows more about this than I do. But you can adjust, yeah, whether your font is bolded, and I think I said all of that. You can choose all kinds of things about the font. You can set your margins. You can usually, just to give an example, in Word, you would go into the menu. So you'd go, and then you can choose font. In let's say, the paragraph section, that's where you'd go in, and you would, you could look at bullets and numbering and things like that. You can set all that kind of stuff. Often what you have to do is select your text, as Jen was talking about, and then sort of go in and go, okay, I selected all these items. I want them to have bullets before them. And so you go in and you'd go to paragraph and bullets. Again, I'm kind of using Word. I know that's really common. I know not everybody uses it, but that's sort of roughly how it works. Headings and subheadings are really important aspect of formatting. Partly because they help sort of set the hierarchy of the document. So if you think of a book with chapter titles or an article with sections and subsections. But another really helpful thing about headings and subheadings is that you can use them to navigate a file. And again, I'm just going to use this one example, and I apologize for those of you who don't use Word, but you can do this in other formats as well. But in Word, for example, you can turn on what's called quick keys, and then you can navigate a Word file the same way you would navigate like a PDF or a web page. And so you can navigate through by heading. So again, when you're setting up a document, for example, in Word and you're formatting, it's really good to have sections and you know, designate them like, okay, this is going to be a heading, this is going to be an H1, this is going to be an H2. I don't want to get into and make it too complicated, but the thing is that by doing that, you can make the document easier to navigate for you or for somebody else. So heading levels, you know, you can have all different heading levels up to like 6. This one thing about heading levels, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're just sort of doing your own document, but if you're actually structuring a document that you're going to, you know, send out to people, and if you're dealing with accessibility requirements or some sort of, you know, professional context, headings need to sort of be in a logical order. So you wouldn't go from heading 1 to heading 3 and or heading 1 to heading 5, that kind of thing. So they sort of, it's sort of like, you know, you might have a section, you might have a chapter, and then you might have sections of the chapter and then subsections of the sections. So it kind of, they're sort of nested together that way. They are quite easy to set up, and as I said, they are very helpful when you're navigating. So, and you can even in some screen reader, actually, I think most, if not all screen readers, you can decide that you want to navigate by heading, you know, maybe you don't want to go through all the headings. Maybe you just want to navigate and find all the H2s. So it really does make it a lot quicker to go through documents, especially ones that are really long. You know, when they're shorter, it's not such a huge issue. But, you know, as documents get longer, it's kind of nice to be able to skip through them a bit. One thing that's great also when if you've formatted your headings, I know I said I wasn't going to do this, but I feel like I want to say an easy way to format it, to create a heading, is if you're, say you're on some text and you want it to be your heading. If you're in Word, for example, you would hit Alt-Control-1, and then you'd have an H1. If you hit Alt-Control-2, you'd have an H2. So let's say you've gone through your document and you've done that. One of the neat things about that is that if you, say you had a document that had like a bunch of different chapters and you wanted to set each of the chapter titles as a heading level, you'd probably set them as an H2, let's say, because your title would be an H1. If at a later date, say, you decided to make all the chapter headings, I don't know, in a blue font instead of black, you just have to change this on one of them, and it will change it on all of them. So sometimes, it's one of those things where sometimes it's really helpful, because with headings, and if you want to insert a table of contents too, Word will use the headings that you've created. So that's another thing that's actually really helpful. The flip side of that is that sometimes our word processors end up being, you know, too smart for their own good, and then they cause us problems where it's almost like autocorrect, right? It thinks it knows what you want to type, and then it's not actually what you want to type, and it's really hard to change it. But for the most part, it can be a real time saver to be able to do some of this stuff. Moving on to spelling and grammar, all of our favorite things here. So two ways of checking spelling in a document. One is that if you have your system set that it will announce an error as you're typing. Sometimes you can do it that way. You can run a spell checker as well. And again, for example, in Word, you can go into the menus and check spelling and grammar. One thing to note that while this doesn't always show up in Braille, the Braille display does enable you to quickly look at what you've typed. I find sometimes that Braille, you know, it's sort of more, it's easier to pinpoint my mistakes, especially things that don't cause the screen reader to speak differently. There can be all kinds of, I catch mistakes that I would never hear. When you come across spelling errors, you both Windows and other programs as well on Mac provide suggestions to correct spelling, and so that can be, again, it's usually helpful. Every once in a while, it can kind of cause issues, but usually you have to go into a menu to get the suggestions. And in some programs you can then, if it's a word that actually is spelled the way you want it to, you can kind of add it to your, you can add it to the dictionary so that it doesn't always flag it as an incorrect word. It all depends on, I know we keep saying this, but part of it really does depend on how you have your word processor set as well, because you can have Word point out grammar issues. You can have it do all kinds of things. You can have it ignore acronyms so that it's not flagging them all the time. There's a lot of flexibility in the word processor as well. And so even though that's not really what we're talking about today, it's sort of hard to talk about formatting and spelling and all these things without talking about your word processor as well, because they kind of work together. And the last thing that, you know, I sort of touched on, and maybe, Jen, you have more to add to this too, but we're probably all familiar with spell checkers. Again, it's, you know, our phones have them, and, you know, our word processors have them. Even, you know, in email, you can have your email set so that before you, I actually do this just so that I don't send a really embarrassing email. Before I hit send, it automatically does a spell check and flags anything that it doesn't think is right. This isn't a guarantee, of course. You can still make mistakes that it doesn't catch. But spell checkers are usually, again, they sort of bring up a dialog box, and usually you navigate them by using tab. A lot of these things, you know, even in the menus, you would navigate using tab. You would use your arrows. One of the fun things about Microsoft and a lot of other programs, too, is that as they update, sometimes they change stuff. So you just learn where something is, and then, you know, you upgrade to, you know, you upgrade Windows, or, I don't know, Word 2020 comes out, and all of a sudden things are in a bit of a different layout. So it is kind of frustrating that way. That's where keyboard commands can be really helpful, because you don't really have to worry if something's in a different place in the menu. But as Jen and I were talking this through, we were sort of laughing about it, going, yeah, we get frustrated. But, you know, sighted people do as well. Everybody kind of complains about, you know, why did they move that? It was just in the perfect place. You know, why couldn't they just leave it there? So that's kind of an overview, as Jen kind of pointed out, that, you know, we wanted to provide. I'm sure there's other things we could cover, and maybe you've come up with things as you've heard us talking. Again, we will provide these notes, and we'll also, the keyboard commands that, you know, we haven't actually listed are all going to be in the document as well. So with that, maybe I'll just hand it back over to Jen for any final thoughts before we go to questions.
Yeah, thanks, Jen. I actually think when we talked about it yesterday, I was going to cover spell checking, so thank you for covering that for me.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay, no problem at all. But yeah, just to add to the what you were saying about dialog boxes and things moving, one of the things we also talked about yesterday when we were, or whatever day that was, when we were planning, was how useful it can be when the first time you go into, say, a spell checker dialog, or say the paragraph formatting dialog, there's all these different options there, and you may not have ever been in there before, so you may not be fully aware of all of the options, and it can be really useful the first, you know, two or three times you go in a new dialog box, just to tab through everything and see what's there, and maybe if there's something that you've never heard of, you could, you know, go on Google and look it up and just see what Google has to say. And then I find, as I'm using a feature, if I'm constantly, for example, going into the paragraph dialog box and changing the line spacing, I want things double spaced instead of single. At that point, if I'm doing it over and over and over again, that's when I would sort of learn the keyboard command so that I don't have to always go through this five-step process to change the line spacing. But yes, so for a dialog box such as, say, a spell checker, you might want to tab through and just see all the different options. You can tell it to ignore words or to add it to a dictionary or to ignore it once but catch it the next time. So there's all sorts of different options. And I think what we're going to do now is open it to questions. And again, we're hoping to keep the questions to sort of about features rather than specific keyboard commands, because we'll include keyboard commands for all of the common operating systems and screen readers in the information that we send out in a few days. So, Kim, I don't know if you'd like to moderate the questions.
Yeah, so I will...
See, this is why she was supposed to talk about spell checking.
I will be happy to moderate the questions. So if people do have questions, maybe we can keep a list. I don't know if I can see raised hands if I'm not the host, but...
I will try to see raised hands.
Okay, so to raise a hand, you can press Alt-A. You can press on a PC. On iDevice, you go into More and raise your hand, and on the telephone, it is *9. I have one question to get us started while everyone is putting their hands up, and that is, how much formatting can I do from the Braille keyboard itself, from a keyboard of a Braille display? Can you put in characters for underline, bold? Can you also, I know it could be different with different screen readers, but how much of that can you do without touching an actual computer keyboard? That was my question. And then, of course, other people, feel free to raise your hand and have your question.
Kim?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. You said Alt-A to raise your hand. It's Alt-Y.
I'm sorry. Alt-A is on mute. Yes, Alt-Y. Sorry. Alt-Y to raise your hand on the PC and Alt under the More tab and 9.
Okay, I see that two participants have raised their hands. I have to figure out how to figure out who they are. So I
okay.
Maybe Jen, do you want to answer?
Let me see if I can tell.
Well, maybe it's Jen J. It's Jen J. I can definitely answer your question, Kim.
Okay.
So in terms of putting in formatting commands such as bold or italic from a Braille display. In the operating systems I've used, it is definitely possible. Again, like we keep saying, it depends on the specific setup and the specific Braille display that you have. But for example, in Microsoft Word, if you want to bold text, I'm using a focus Braille display, and it is definitely possible to hit that command without touching the computer keyboard. And in fact, what I've done many times is I've actually been, you know, over sitting on my couch, editing a Word document on my laptop just from the Braille display. So I'm creating lists, I'm bolding things, I'm creating headings without ever touching my computer keyboard. But what it did require is it did require that I sort of learned the specific commands for my Braille display for doing those commands on Windows.
That's great. Thank you. And I'm assuming those are those in your list of handouts?
Those ones are not in our list just because we'd have to list out ones for every, like it would get a bit difficult with all the Braille displays. However, we are sending out a list of resources. So we do have those types of resources in so that if you wanted to go to, you know, find out how to use the focus, for example, with JAWS, and Word and use all those Windows commands, we've listed to some resources that can get you started.
Okay. And that is what I'm using too. So I may, if I'm stuck, I may ask you offline.
Can I just jump in for a second?
Sure.
So one thing is that like when I first got a Braille display, I got a book that helped me kind of repair it and figure out how it worked. And then I ended up getting a different Braille display quite a bit later, and the commands weren't quite the same, so I just had to sort of play with it, because there's some that are kind of standard, but then manufacturers do different things. So you just have to be willing to kind of experiment a bit as well. I also wanted to, I have figured out how to see the raised hands, so I'm going to go to those two people now, but before I do that, I just wanted to note as well that if you have additional questions, you're welcome to email the info@blcmailbox, and I will either answer them or Jen will answer them. We will get back to you. So if you know we don't get to your question today, or you don't want to ask it here, don't worry, you can still ask it. So let's go to,
and that mailbox is info@blc-lbc.ca. If you don't have it handy, that is the mailbox.
And I'm sorry if I've got you out of order, but this is how it's appearing for me, is Irene Hampton, and then after that is Diana Brent. So, Irene, do you want to ask your question?
Thank you very much. Yes, I've already unmuted, and my apologies. I just did the wave the hand thing because I wanted to get Kim in the know there, because she wasn't sure if she could. My statement is I've got a really fantastic one that I've shared with Kim on how to persuade the Braille display to read Spanish and French by using the computer and the keyboard command. So if anybody is struggling with Spanish or French, I haven't got the contracted French yet, but I do have six-dot French and Spanish on my Braille display text, which is fantastic. Go ahead, Jen.
That's awesome. Thank you. I read those languages as well, and it, on some of my devices it works well, and others it doesn't. So I may get in touch with you offline and see what I can learn. Okay, thanks, Irene. Diana.
Just, I don't know what you as presenters think about this, but I've gone in to the settings in Word and turned off a lot of the auto format and auto correct things, like suddenly capitalizing things, keeping bulleting when you might not want it, so that when I want it, I can go and highlight what I want formatted and then do the command or find the menu item to do that. Because sometimes your word processors drive you instead of you driving them. So that was my main comment. The other comment, in terms of Braille displays and commands, I do all of the formatting on my Braille display as well, and I have two different displays, but the point is I can do all of the standard, like control B to bold and italics and underline, just by using those Braille commands for the display I'm using, but they're the Windows commands. So I'll do control B to bold or whatever. So that's all I was going to say.
Thanks, Diana.
That's great to know.
Jen, I don't know if you wanted to say anything. I just wanted to comment that I actually can appreciate turning off all of the auto formatting, because sometimes Word tries to be too controlling. And so sometimes it can be really helpful, but other times it can be really frustrating. So, you know, again, although we're talking about screen readers and Braille displays, sometimes you have to figure out how you want your word processor to work as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've gone in and I haven't turned off everything, but I've definitely turned off some of those auto format features. And it's also just a good thing to be aware of, that if those are turned on, Word might be changing the formatting on you without you necessarily knowing. So it's not a bad idea to go in and see what it may be changing and turn off what you don't want it to change.
It's the same on the iPhone too. I turned off like auto-correcting things on there. Can I just point out one thing that Jen and Jen said about learning your way around? One thing I do for sure, so if I'm using a new Braille display or playing with one, I go into the keyboard help. When you're in the keyboard help, it will tell you what certain buttons on your display do.
Thank you, Kim. That's a great point.
And in iOS, on a Braille display, that is cord K. So that's very, very easy to remember. And it's usually insert one on many of the screen readers, I guess. Not all, but definitely on the Mac and the iPhone, it's cord K on your Braille display. And then just play with the little buttons and the extra switches and even commands. If you forget what they are, the cording commands, you can get a quick go of that. So for sure, that's a handy thing to do.
Thanks so much, Kim. We didn't mention that, but that is such a useful feature. And I use that all the time if I can't quite remember a command, because I don't want to hit a command and have something, you know, weird happen. So I'll just go into the help mode and hit it. And if it's the one I want, I use it. And then if it's not, I'll, you know, just press different keys till I find what I want. So that is really useful.
Thanks, Jen. I'm actually not seeing any other hands raised. So if you have a question and I haven't, you know, I'm not seeing it.
Just unmute yourself and call it up.
Yeah, unmute yourself and say your name. But there doesn't seem to be any other hands raised or any other questions, which is fine.
Or a tip if anyone has. Oh, I think Peg unmuted. Hey, Peg?
I just unmuted. And, I was just trying to remember what the key command for finding out the commands for the iPhone. You were just mentioning it. Something K?
So it's cord K if you're using a Braille display. You're using a Bluetooth keyboard, it's also VoiceOver plus K, but you can also get in there by doing that four-finger double tap near the bottom of your screen, or going into your VoiceOver settings and going into help, then they will all. So there's lots of ways of getting that nowadays.
And there's probably lots of things that you can do that we haven't necessarily touched on, or and then of course there's depends on your word processor, depends on your device, depends on your. Like, this is always the ongoing thing, right? It's very hard. But as we said, you know, feel free to contact us off list, and maybe, you know, once you get the follow up documents that we're going to send, then you can sort of look through those, and if you find there's something in there that we didn't include, please feel free to let us know.
Or if you don't understand something in the document, you can certainly.
Yeah, absolutely. Feel free.
You know, if you don't know what something is. I've always had a problem knowing what kind of bullets I need to put in. Hollow square bullets, filled round bullets, star-shaped bullets, this and that. I struggle with that. This isn't a really question, but I never know.
I always stick with the solid round ones if I can, but I don't know. That's right.
Those are really common. I think the only reason why, it's very hard to know, but I know just from looking at documents that sighted people have created, JAWS will actually tell you which ones are there, and so it seems like you would start with the filled round bullets, and then sometimes you would, if you have like a sub list, you'd use the hollow round ones. But I think the other thing to keep in mind is that sometimes there's no rhyme nor reason. Like, people just choose what they choose. And so I think because we're very used to Braille being structured and there's so many rules about all different things, we assume that sighted people are always following all sorts of rules about how things can be, when there's some things are a lot more fluid than that. I don't know if that has been your experience, Jen, but.
Yeah, I would think, well, and I do have low vision, so I do have experience reading print, and I would agree that bullets, things like bullets, and even like the exact style of a heading in terms of the font size and color, that's all just preference, and it just depends on the kind of the theme of the document. So if a document is using maybe a bold red headings, the people might choose to use a red diamond as a bullet, and it's just to kind of make things match. I think the filled round bullets are usually pretty safe because they're the default ones I think that Word uses, And so I personally, I just never change it. I just use those filled round ones.
Yeah, I do too.
I do that. And like a heading should be bigger, right? Like the font of a heading should be bigger than the text, and the font of an H1 should be technically should be bigger than an H2. That kind of like it's sort of there's concepts to keep in mind, but.
But they'll automatically, right? Word will do that automatically, won't it?
Yeah, so one of the nice things about headings is when you press Alt-1 or Control-Alt or whatever the command is to do a heading level 1, Word will automatically do some of that formatting for you. So it'll make the text larger, and I think by default it makes it blue. But you can also go in if you want and change those. So, for example, when I did my thesis, there were very specific formatting guidelines about what font size and bolding and whatnot that the headings had to be. And so I couldn't have big, blue headings. So I had to go in and change that. But as we said in the workshop, the nice thing is I only had to go in and change it once, and then it was reflected in all of the headings throughout the document. So that's another thing to be aware of, is that if you're doing something like an academic thesis, there might be very, very specific formatting guidelines that you have to follow. But if you're just doing a document that's more informal, then you have a bit more choice about how you lay these things out.
But the bullet sign for UEB is always, it doesn't matter what kind of shape bullet it is, it's going to be
that's kind of another issue. Like that, you can't, the transcriber, if a document's being transcribed, the transcriber can actually do different shapes. Oh. If you need to know what the shape of the bullet is, the transcriber can do that. There's like
but
a
if
standard
I'm just
bullet
reading
symbol.
An email from you with bullets in UEB translated by my screen reader, it's only going to show one symbol, right?
Yeah, except that, like, again, it depends on how you have your JAWS settings. Like, mine are set so that it will tell me, I don't know if you've ever seen if you're, say, reading something, and it'll say FRND, it means filled round bullet.
No, I think I've only seen, but maybe I don't have the settings set.
It just, again, it depends on how you configure things. But, to answer your question, yeah, for the most part, if you're reading something on your Braille display and it's set to UEB, those bullets are pre-UEB, but that's how it will look depending on how you...
Like almost a 4, 5, 6, like period symbol.
That is exactly what the symbol is.
Yeah, okay.
Does anybody have any other questions?
Just a comment, and this is kind of interesting. If you're doing a bulleted list in Word, for example, and you decide that you want to put something underneath an item, like the item might say, the following things can be bought at the store, and you want that to go underneath that particular bulleted item, if you do enter and then press tab, Word will start another bullet.
Like a sublet.
Like a hollow bullet. A hollow bullet, yes.
Oh.
Yeah. And then hollow bullet. That mine usually says hollow bullet. And it'll go, you keep entering, and then to get back out of that, I think you press shift tab to get back to your main bulleted.
I think so,
Oh,
I didn't know. That's a good one.
Yeah, I've done that quite a bit. Also, can you format, like if you could bring a Duxbury file into your Braille display, can you do the styles, the formatting there, or is it better to do that from the computer?
Do you want to answer that, Jen, or do you want me to?
Just curious.
I don't have a huge amount of experience with Duxbury, so Jen, I don't know if you have more.
Yeah, so... sorry about that. It depends on... I don't want to say it depends, but that's really preference. Like, some transcribers do almost all of the work in Word, and then they import the file into Duxbury, and Duxbury will import the same style. So if you take a document in Word that you've created and you apply headings and lists and everything, when you import it into Duxbury, it's pretty good. Like, Duxbury is pretty good about doing that. I often do basic formatting like that in Word because Because I just, well, I, you know what, it, again, I don't want to say this, it depends. It depends on what it is, but I just find it very easy to apply the styles in Word, to play with it. I think because that's usually the source file, right, it's usually Word. So I'll play with it in Word, and then I put it in Duxbury. It really depends on what the Word file looks like. It's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other. There's certain things that I find work better in Duxbury and certain things that work better in Word. I don't, like, that's kind of a whole, I actually did a workshop on that a few years ago. Because, yeah, there's a lot of different things you can, a lot of different ways you can tweak your transcription process so that it's easier. But all that to say that Duxbury does work quite well with Word, and there's even, like, an add-in, a plug-in or whatever that you can have in Word that will allow you to do quite a bit of Duxbury stuff in Word and then just import your file.
This is Diana Brent, and I just wanted to comment about Duxbury. I do a lot of Word stuff in Word, but I have Duxbury on my LBrail, and I bring the files in there, and I do a lot of formatting in Duxbury, and then I bring up the code list, and I can see the codes to make the different headings and lists and whatever I want to do, and I can then edit those codes if they're not where I want them, and you get a lot of control by flipping between the format and the edited information in Duxbury, especially when it's on a Braille display, because if you're only using your speech, it does a lot of talking that gets in the way. So a lot of times I turn the speech off and just use Braille.
Yeah, I would find Braille transcription very difficult without a Braille display. I don't know how. Yeah, it would be very challenging. And I agree that getting familiar with codes and styles in Duxbury, and again, that could be another teleconference, but sometimes you can see what's going on in the file. Why you're kind of going, like, why is it doing that? Why isn't it letting me do this, or why isn't it letting me do that? And then you pull up the coded view, and you see, like, oh, because I'm trying to, you know, apply this style, and it's within another file, and so it's not letting it, you know, or there's a... you know, a page break indicator or something, but it's in the midst of a table, so it's not working properly. So yeah, it's, I guess ultimately too, Jen, I don't know if you know, one of my thoughts on this whole thing was, you know, while a lot of these commands are sort of screen reader commands and word processor commands, having a Braille display, it's like, it gives you a really tangible way to see what your file looks like. So,
yeah, I agree.
I have a question.
Yeah. Monique has a go ahead, Monique.
Oh, so sorry, because I'm on the phone, and I'm a Braille user and transcriber, and I use Duxbury to do most of the document. Format some, because thanks for the presentation using Word, as things I didn't know and I never thought to use. But I think with the Duxbury, you can see the real code and remove some codes, because I realize sometimes some code doesn't work when you transcribe your own text in Braille. With the Duxbury, I saw some codes, and the format is very strange when you transcribe in DX Braille file. And even sometimes I do some arrangement with the Braille display, because if you want to see what's going on, the code doesn't help either, and especially when you have to do tables, I think it's better to do Braille for Braille, and it's easier anyway, is the way I do it. But the first question you have to ask, who you transcribe Braille, for yourself, for a customer, who are your people you transcribe for? I think it's very important to know, is the first question I see. If just a copy for me, I don't care, even I forget two things. No codes. Sometimes I see some codes in print, we don't need them in Braille. And that's the first question we should ask for ourselves when we transcribe Braille. Who will be our readers?
And question, Irene?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Monique. That's useful. Please give us, if this is appropriate, please give us when, where, why, and how I should be using 8-dot Braille on my Braille display.
Do you want to answer that, Jen, or?
Sure. Well, my personal experience is I use 6-dot Braille with the exception of the cursor. Obviously, that uses dot 7 and 8. But from what I have heard from other people is 8-dot Braille is more useful if you're doing something like computer programming where you need a direct one-to-one correspondence between the characters on your Braille display and the characters that are showing in the computer code. So that's not something I have a whole lot of experience with. I don't know if you use that setting, Jen.
The only time I do it is in that exact instance when I'm looking at, just for my job, if I'm looking at an XML file or something and I actually need to see what's there without any interpretation from the screen reader or the Braille display. Other than that, I do the same thing as you. I just use 6-dot and I use dot 7 and 8. Like I like it to highlight things when they're bolded or when I've selected something, the dot 7 and 8 will kind of come up and show that that's selected. So I like it for that. But other than that, I don't use it.
My name is Tracy Moose.
I don't know anyone else who uses 8-dot really, except program.
My name is Tracy. I tend to use 8-dot because most of the stuff that I work with is directly on with the computer. So I tend to use 8-dot most of the time, except if I'm reading on the display BRF file.
How did you learn it, Tracy? I'm just curious, like the different, what the commands
Well,
are.
I think it started because at my work, I had a Braille display, and the programs that we used to get the information from was in computer, and I didn't have the option of putting it into grade 2. Now I don't see the necessity of translating it back and forth, and if there's a mistake, I just use the computer keyboard. To me, it makes more sense. I'm quicker.
It's definitely a personal preference issue.
Yeah.
For a lot of things like this.
And I like to, just a reminder too, on the iPhone, you can select text now with a really good tool you can put in your rotor called text selection. When you put it in your rotor and you swipe, you twist your rotor to it and you swipe down with one finger, it gives you the opportunity to select word, line, page, everything. And that does show up underneath. I just thought of it when you said that, Jen. It shows up when you're reading with your Braille display what you've selected. And then you can go and do things with that. And in 13, in the new iOS, there's a lot more you can do. So I think you can change fonts and you can do more things. So it's good to keep it, like to keep to know how to select the text on iOS 2 now.
And as Jen said earlier, one of the things that we're going to include in the documents we send you is just a couple of resources with, besides the keyboard commands that we give you. One of the things on the list is actually a book about from National Braille Press about basically just how to edit on iDevices and definitely Braille displays and external keyboards are included in that. So,
It's Tracy again. I have a question. I guess none of the material there is for using Braille displays or anything with Android phone.
I don't have any resources on that. I know that it's, and Jen, you might know more about this. I know that there is more Braille support with Android than there used to be. We can definitely look into that, though, and see if we can provide.
It's still not very good, though. It's not built in. It's a separate app, Braille back, and it's nowhere near.
Well, the problem was the person they had working on it, had a blind person they had working with, no interest in Braille, and that was part of the problem. And I know that, but I am an Android user.
Yeah, do you use Braille with your Android?
I've just started to, so because I got the new Focus Blue. So,
keep us updated as to if it improves, because the last time I tried it, it was very, very rudimentary. You couldn't really.
Yeah, it probably still is, but I will keep you informed.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That would be good to know because I don't.
You couldn't navigate. You
I don't want to misinform people either, so it would be great to know if you find that improvements are made, or and if we find more resources, we'll definitely share them.
Okay.
Comment,
I think
Irene?
People have been lobbying Google to put Braille in, as Apple has, with their accessibility suite, and so far that has not happened. I've also heard, I don't know if anyone's using Braille with the Fire tablets. Apparently that's pretty good. If anyone is, I'd really love to know sometime about that.
Irene, and then maybe we'll take one more after that, and then we'll...
Okay, thank you. Very quick comment. My last discussion with Kim a couple months ago was that the lady that I'm working with was trying to use Focus 14 Braille display with her Android phone, and you'll be delighted to hear the good news, Kim. She went out and bought an iPhone.
Well, it was really not working, but Tracy, if you do get it working, we'd love to know, and if anyone is using it with other systems like this, Amazon.
I'll let you know, but even if it doesn't work, I'm not going to go out and get an iPhone.
No, it's not the reason, but...
I know, I'm just teasing.
So just, yeah. We'll take one final question, and then we will kind of have some closing comments.
Oh, I think I raised my hand. It's Peg. Oh,
okay, I'm sorry, Peg. I missed it.
Oh, never mind. Just a quick, because I've been hearing rumblings that with iOS 13, which I haven't upgraded to yet, there's some bugs with the Braille. I don't know about Braille screen input, but about the Braille keyboard. So how long should we wait to upgrade? Because
13.1 has come out and it is much better. It's not terrible. There's the odd little bit of a bug, but it's nowhere near what it was before. I have it 13.1 and it seems to be okay. Braille screen input is fine.
Oh, that's great. That's what I use mostly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Braille is better. It was freezing a little bit sometimes and it was jumping around, but it seemed better to me. But then I would say you're probably safe to go to 13.1.
And it was jumping around with the Braille displays or the keyboards,
well,
right?
It was freezing. Yeah. You'd start to type and it would just be laggy. And anyway, okay. But it seems better to me so far.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
So before I hand it back to Kim, I did just want to say quickly, and I forgot to ask Kim to say this, otherwise she'd be saying it. We did realize just this week that this teleconference conflicted with the AEBC meeting, so we apologize for that. That was it was not intentional. So we actually will coordinate. We'll probably have another teleconference end of November or so, but we will coordinate and make sure it doesn't happen at the same time as the AEBC meeting. So I just want to.
And I'll give you some. We're actually the meeting's in the next room, so this has worked out okay. But we'll just figure out what dates we're looking at, and then I'll let you know, Jen, what dates might consider.
We'll,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll make sure we don't do this again.
Oh, no problem.
it was great. It's hard sometimes because we could find that we're hitting some other blindness thing.
Well, that's right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So we want to thank everybody for coming on the call. I like to keep it down to the time we said. And thanks to Jen and Jen Squared for presenting for us today. Trying to learn to do more formatting from my Braille. That's my resolution from my Braille display, to do a more actual formatting from there. Mm-hmm. And we will be sending everyone the link to the recording, I believe, as well as the note. Jen will be sending them probably from the info account, right, Jen?
Or Anthony. Anthony
and the key commands, right? And the key commands as well. Yeah, great.
It might take us a couple of days, but we will get it.